I would just think the stickiness experience is the most intense reading a physical book. Hey, everybody. I'm Tim, the curator. This is the first podcast with your hosts, Joe and Lars. Welcome in.
Holy cow.
Thank you.
That was the best one yet. That was a perfect intro in every possible way.
You didn't forget the name of the show. You didn't forget our names.
There was one and that was about it.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, well, because we kind of just throw the guests into the deep end for that first moment and... You know, understandably, some of them don't really, some of them drown, some of them...
It's kind of a sink or swim situation. Yeah,
understood.
So you now set the bar for the rest of the guests, so congratulations. Tim, the curator, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm Tim, the curator, meaning I head up a record label called Curator. Our mission is to work with composers and corporations to publish master recordings from classic game soundtracks. It'd be really fun one day to expand into maybe other forms of media, but for the moment, I identified about 6 years ago this really interesting little niche where certain games made in about the mid-90s when they were just transitioning from floppies to CD-ROMs needed a lot of compression on all their assets to fit on limited media. You know, now we have like... double layer Blu-rays and stuff and just, you know, massive downloads. But back then they were trying to ship to customers. So they had all these assets, these wonderful assets, art, music, audio, sound effects that all were like really crunched down to a low bit rate and a low fidelity. And years ago, I was on a composer's website and I heard a sample of a song I recognized from a game, but it was in this startling crystal clarity. I was blown away. I was like, what? So I sent him a message, used the contact form on the site and said, hey, so does this exist? Like, I'd never considered that music I had heard, hissy and in mono, mm-hmm. you know, as a kid playing this game would still exist somewhere in this better quality. Sent him an email and said, hey, you know, do you have this? And he said, yeah, I do. You know, it's not really released in any format. It's over here, but like maybe one day I'll get around to it. And I thought, what if I did that? Mm-hmm. And that was years ago, and it's brought me in contact with a lot of amazing people, and it's been really interesting. It's a limited niche to walk around in, but we've made it our own. And so the big thing we're known for right now, and that we're working on most prominently, is the music of Humongous Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Humongous Entertainment was a studio making children's PC games back in the 2000s. A lot of people, if they heard some audio from it or saw the logo, would remember all of a sudden, oh my God, it's...
Oh, for sure,
it's
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Pajama mm-hmm. Sam, Freddy Fish, Putt-Putt, Spy Fox, and even the Backyard Sports series, Backyard Baseball, Football.
You probably just triggered a lot of people's memories just by saying those names. Those were classics.
Exactly. It comes around on the nostalgia subreddit, like every 3 months. Somebody's like, oh, you remember mm-hmm. these gems? And... yeah, no, they were great. But it was co-founded by Ron Gilbert of LucasArts fame. And he was really interested in, hey, would it be possible to do adventure games for children? Like no one had really done before.
Mm.
And he took all of his incredible energy and visionary spirit and threw it into this incredible studio. And they worked with composers like the Fat Man, who did Wing Commander and Seventh Guest and like hundreds of other games. And Jeremy Soule got his start he was actually internal. He was just like sound designer, I think, there at the studio. Not sound designer. He was on the sound team there. And when they were looking for a composer for one of the later Putt-Putt games, he said, well, I could do that. And so he, before Skyrim mm-hmm. And the Elder Scrolls and everything else he went on to do, that's how he got his start. So it's some great music.
Did he... composed for Elder Scrolls Arena?
He did not. I don't know who did. I don't know how much music is in Arena.
There's music in there, and it's actually surprisingly complex. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I checked it out recently because we actually interviewed the creator of Elder Scrolls, and I was like playing through the game, and I'm like, this hasn't necessarily stood the test of time in terms of graphics and gameplay.
It's rough.
The soundtrack was like, whoa, it was, and they had like actual audio clips and stuff of people talking. It was, kind of blew my mind. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a little, little random aside. Go ahead.
No, it's a good question. I think, because I know Jeremy Soule's theme for Elder Scrolls was established in Morrowind.
Okay. Joe, you've been absolutely completely quiet this entire time. Yeah. I'm wondering if you are.
Well, I've just been kind of listening to you. I didn't want to interrupt you guys' nice back and forth. whatever I have to say.
Is there anything that you do actually want to ask of him? I have a tendency to hog the mic in the first part of the episode.
Yeah, you do. has been made clear now. No, I don't know. I've just been enjoying the delightful back and forth. Do you have a favorite video game or something that you're either into now or something that stands out from the past?
I really, really loved Hotline Miami. Played a lot of Hotline Miami. The first one was really fantastic in its game plan. Kind of came out of nowhere. I think I got it in Humble Indie Bundle 8. I've always really enjoyed what the Humble guys have done and established in their space.
The little bundles are great.
Yeah.
Those are cool.
Yeah. And I dare say it was more exciting back when it was more of an underground kind of thing. Not everybody knew about it. It wasn't like this big store that rivaled Steam, but,
So you were into it before everyone else was. You were,
when
it was cool.
Yeah, I didn't want
to
say that verbatim, but that's what I was thinking. Yeah, no, it is true.
You don't want to say it verbatim, but it is what you're thinking.
But
verbatim.
It is true verbatim. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. But no, Hotline Miami was always awesome, and it had just an incredible soundtrack that brought a lot of indie artists. I mean, I think Moon, who is one of the most prominent artists from it, and his career is just, I mean, I don't know how much he's done, but everything he's produced since has been very successful. But he was like 16, and they used stuff in the game of his that he had composed and put on SoundCloud when he was like 13, and he just never imagined it would blow up the way it did. But like Hydrogen, I think is his most famous song from there. And yeah, he just really blew up. So I love the themes, the music and the narrative themes of that game.
Okay.
Second game, I love the way it wrapped up the story, but the gameplay is a little rougher. It's too big. It's kind of too overblown. There's a couple of my favorites.
Do you normally prefer like a certain type of genre?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I did a lot of first-person shooters as a kid. I don't really play anymore, like, in general. And Curator kind of put the nail in the coffin for me a little bit, because I spent a lot of time. I've played, the first soundtrack we were working on was Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, and I've now played that probably about 2,000 times, like, through.
Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo?
Yeah, 1995.
The audience will know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes. Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, of course.
Yes. They've got that famous song in there, Welcome to the Zoo.
Did you ever consider, since you've been playing it so much, trying to go for like a speed run or something?
Somebody already did, actually.
Yeah.
So I figured that was already taken. Like he did it. He did
in like 45 seconds or something. It was ridiculous.
Like
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can hear him. You can hear him like breathing kind of heavily and clicking really hard throughout the whole thing. I'm like, good for him. That's great. But no,
I remember this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
The paints or whatever is what.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. If the audience doesn't know who that is, they just Google it. You'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I used to play that. Yeah.
There's the ice, the lake.
It's the colors, right? Like that color palette, the way it all looks is really vivid and really, can take you back to a certain time in your life immediately. I got to call one of the people I brought into this whole project was one day I was like, I think I'd like to work with the voice actor who voiced Putt-Putt. Wonder what he's up to. So found his phone number and email address and sent him an email and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm working on these soundtracks. Do you want to record something?
Mm.
And he's in his early 30s. His name is Jason Ellefson. Really just fantastic dude. Just struck up a really nice connection with him. And he said, sure. And so I flew him out from Vegas. He was the manager of a place called Beer Park, which was this massive rooftop beer garden in Las Vegas. That was huge. And he was manager, co-manager there. So I flew him out to Seattle and we recorded some promotional material. We recorded actually a couple of Did You Know Gaming episodes using his voice. And he's great. He's got a really good voice these days too. He's very like gravelly and he's just awesome. So we recorded in the same studio where he recorded as a child in Seattle. It was called Bad Animals. And it's also where Pearl Jam and Heart and Soundgarden recorded most of their stuff, and Alice in Chains as well.
Well, those are some big names.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was really neat. We recorded in the very same room, and it was kind of a nice reunion. He came, and then he invited the writer-director of the games to come and join us, Lori Arnold. She's just fantastic. Directed us through the whole thing, and then we filmed some interview material with the sound engineer who had originally been the recording engineer for those old games, and this whole thing has just been a really, really fun and interesting walk down memory lane, and this gathering of these really incredible people. I touched on it a minute ago. Humongous Entertainment was a very unique studio. Like, we look back on it and go, oh yeah, there's some fun memories. But if you think about it, nothing like that exists now. You know, we have this studio at their peak in the year 2000, before their twilight. They hosted over 80 animators. Mm-hmm. Who worked on their games in this massive office that's now the headquarters of a Seattle branch of Boeing. And they made these very, very successful games that were very labor intensive and quite expensive to produce. And they were aimed squarely at children. Their tagline was software that doesn't underestimate your child. So Ron was really concerned from the beginning with never talking down to kids. He came up with the whole idea for the studio watching his partner, Shelley Day's, I think 4 or 5 year old son, Travis, play The Secret of Monkey Island. And Travis couldn't read, so he didn't really get the story or like the, you know, the narrative or the, but he noticed Travis could figure out the basic mechanics of how to use the inventory on the environment, how to open and close doors and move around and stuff. And he was like, yeah, you know, kids are smart. And how do we do something? And he was really interested in not making what he called crappy edutainment games, but adventures for kids.
Remember those educational ones that were going around back then, where you would take them home to try it, and then like a sample, and it would be that CD-ROM with the Explorer game.
I think so. Like stuff like Math Blasters, and
do you remember this game called Number Munchers?
I think. Yeah, no, I've heard Number Munchers. I've heard of it. It's like a sister to Math Blasters, right? Yeah,
it's like fractions and stuff, and like if you ate the wrong one, you die.
it sounds relatable. Sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We all played something like that, you know, and there was Reader Rabbit. And you know, a lot of them were great. But it was just such a different landscape. You know, I'm fascinated by that. How different, because now, I mean, think about it. What's a game that is for children, like under the age of 10?
Fortnite.
Yeah, but, well, okay. Yeah. You know, that's kind of the smart-ass answer, yes. But it's not, of course. It's not like, we have stuff like Fortnite and Minecraft, which, you know, Minecraft is arguably still popular.
Yeah.
But none of it is aimed squarely at children. In fact, very little entertainment in general is aimed squarely at children. We have we have adult stuff. We have a young adult, you know, YA, like novels and movies and stuff. And then we have family entertainment.
Yeah.
But we don't really, and I'm not sure that's a problem. I don't know that that's wrong. It's just, it's fascinating to me. So Humongous Entertainment really represents this very bygone era of like stuff that was made specifically for kids.
I feel like back then in like the late 90s, early 2000s, kids were much more of a industry, I guess, when it comes, like there were foods marketed just for kids, music, yes, like Kids Bop.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all good points. And now we just, you know, expect and observe kids listening to mumble rap like everybody else, which again, I don't even know that's a problem. It's just a really interesting difference to me. So I think part of why what I'm doing has been successful and has attracted the interest that it has is I was so interested in, like, when people look at Pajama Sam, I think, or Putt-Putt or any of these characters and remember, oh man, I think part of what you're remembering, honestly, is this character in this world that was just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that really, yeah, that was just for you as a child. And we don't have a lot of things like that anymore. Everything is for everyone. And it's fun to get to revisit that. The music has been great.
What does that actually look like, by the way? Can you walk the audience through, like, are you guys re-recording parts or are you going to the original masters and translating them into something a little bit more modern sounding, or what are you guys doing?
It's a good question. Thank you. So we've been digging. So when I started this, I wondered, I was like, why hasn't anybody done this? Like, well, this is so obvious and sort of just sitting there. 6 years later, I understand very clearly. What we do is a lot of talking with people. So a project under curator usually starts with just reaching out to a party and saying, hey, composer. It's usually the composer I talk to first, not the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And say, hey, do you still have this? Do you still have masters from this thing? And explain what I do and I, hey, there's an opportunity here. And they go yes or no. If yes, then I say, okay, hang on just a second. I got to go talk to the people who actually own this music and see if they're interested in doing something with it. Now that you're basically on board, let's turn around. So then I turn around and I talk with, you know, like EA or Lego or the people who own Humongous Entertainment and say, hey, look, Same question. And then we get to, and if everybody's basically on board, then we get to digging up the archival material, the masters themselves, to answer specific points of your question. No,
yeah.
I haven't really been interested in re-recording stuff if possible. I've been really interested in, hey, can we find this, the original recording pre-compression and restore that?
Mm-hmm.
So that can take quite a bit of effort. Like the first Freddy Fish one that we're working on right now, I've been working on that for like a year and a half and we are still not there. Had to, you know, we took like a year to actually get the material and then we got it and I parsed through it and I discovered, oh, this isn't all of it. It's missing. Okay. So this is kind of interesting to me. And I find this stuff interesting. This is basically why I do what I do, or why I'm in the position that I'm in, because I find this stuff interesting, because most people wouldn't. But to briefly explain, Freddy Fish had a keyboard as part of this kind of live band that recorded all at once. The keyboard I have a static recording of on what is called an ADAT or a sort of digital audio tape.
Yeah.
But in the game, they didn't use the keyboard as it was originally recorded. The keyboard was recording to a MIDI file that was then fed through a different sound font, in this case, specifically a steel drum. And then the steel drum version of the keyboard recording was what was used in the final versions of the tracks. So I don't have those MIDI files yet. We've been working for a couple months to try to track those down and find out where they are. And I don't know if they still exist, but it's stuff like that. It's like it's amazing how much material is here. For Puppet Saves the Zoo, I was given 12 and a half hours of audio recordings, which took me at the time like 6 months to parse through and figure out what was there. But we are also inviting, I mean, we've branched out. Did either of you ever play The Sims, the first Sims?
Of course, yeah.
I played it.
Okay. Do you remember the piano stuff that was in build mode? The piano music?
Yes.
Fantastic stuff.
I mostly played Sims 2, but I don't know if it changed.
Well, there's kind of a running theme through The Sims that's kind of...
There is. And the piano music that I'm talking about specifically actually made it into The Sims 2 under the New Age channel on the radio. Did you ever explore the radio channels at all?
Yes. I think I know that one.
Yeah, that's great stuff. It's very nostalgic for a lot of people. If you heard it, you probably recognize it. So that wasn't super heavily compressed, but I reached out to Jerry Martin, the composer, and said, hey, look, what do you think about getting the original pianist you worked with, John R. Martin, who was an improviser and was just a great pianist, to record new live versions in like a nice recording space in the Bay Area of that stuff, of those piano tracks, and then pressing it to vinyl. And he said, oh, that sounds cool. I want to write some new stuff to go along with it. And that's going to take me a little while. So I said, that's fine. So that's an instance of looking into a new opportunity to record something new.
I have a question for you, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
You said you've been working on Putt-Putt for a year and a half, right?
I said Freddie Fish for a year and a half.
Oh, Freddie Fish. Else, yeah. Sir. So yeah, yeah. What if I told you that in a year and a half, you could save a substantial amount on your cell phone bill?
Oh, no.
I would be really excited, and I'd want to hear what you'd say next.
Funny you should ask. Let's talk about our sponsor, Mint Mobile, Joe.
Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is one of my favorite companies. Mint Mobile saved my marriage.
Well, I don't think that's true.
Is that the whole? Is that the whole thing?
No. We actually have to talk about who they are and what they do. Mint Mobile is a network that piggybacks off of T-Mobile, buys in bulk, and passes savings on to you. What that means is that their plans start at a ridiculously low $15 a month.
Damn, son.
$50 a month? You say 50?
No, I said 15. You know that I said that. You do this
every
time.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. Mint Mobile is just, I don't even know really how to describe it. It's just a really incredible company that I used to use just as a customer. And we're glad to have them as a sponsor finally. They just increased their data packs up to, I think, 60% each.
That was nice and generous of them.
Yeah, no extra costs, no hidden fees, no...
Surely there's some hidden costs.
No, they're actually really transparent about all that. Also, the plans cap out at $38 a month, and that's for the Mac Daddy package. So it's just, you know, we have a lot of millennials in the audience who might be looking for...
The what?
The Mac Daddy package. Yeah, that's what I call it.
It's the Cadillac Escalade of cell phone packages.
I get it. No, it's very attractive.
Where can they learn more about that opportunity?
As a customer, I have to recommend you check this out at mint.t1podcast.com. If you go there, you can...
mint.t1podcast.com.
Yes, thank you for... We actually did need to repeat it, so that's fine. We can be awkwardly shoehorned in there. Thank you, Joe. All right, let's get back to it.
No worries. Just in terms of re-recording stuff, you guys had... Pogo, Nick Bertke, on your podcast. I understand it was
guest.
The first podcast. Yeah. So I've been in touch with him for a good while. And I wound up with the master dialogue recordings for Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, which was...
Oh, did you give them to him to remix or something? That seems like something he'd be wanting to do.
I can't really... confirm or deny exactly, but I can hint at a possibility like that.
Oh, okay.
We're seeing what potential is there.
Nice.
But that's another example of you know, an opportunity coming through finding this archival stuff to make something new.
Yeah.
So, it's been a lot of fun what we've gotten to do.
I highly recommend you check that episode out, by the way. It was a good one. He's a pretty well-spoken guy. Pretty pensive.
He is.
Yep.
He's great. He's
Joe.
Yep.
Do you want to toss a hypothetical at him?
Oh, geez. I'm not too good at coming up with them on the spot.
Clearly.
Well, here's my idea of a hypothetical question.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the show The Office?
Yes.
Which character would you most want to... be.
That's such a stupid question, Joe.
That's not really a hypothetical.
Exactly.
But, let's use it as a warm up. That's fine. Yeah. Then I'll give you guys a hypothetical.
That's how I meant it, as a warm up.
Well, we'll call it a lukewarm up.
I would want to be. What's his name? Clark?
Oh, yeah, Clark.
Yes.
The guy who hangs out with Flop Plop.
Yes. Yeah.
Clark I thought Clark was Plop.
Yeah, I think Clark was Plop. Who's the
No, that was Clark, and then Plop was Pete.
Peter?
Pete. Okay, that's actually who I'm thinking of.
Oh, you'd
Pete.
Want to be Pete?
Pardon me. Pardon me. I want to be Pete. Yeah, because he winds up with Aaron, right?
Yes.
Aaron's cute.
Oh, do you have a thing for redheads or something? Is that what? Oh, okay.
No, I have a thing for Aaron's.
Oh.
That's it.
Just really kind of like spacey, kind of been through an orphanage and had a life.
She was in foster care. There's a big difference.
Oh, okay.
No, he only works there for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to work there for any great length of time. And nope, he winds up with a hot female. So that's
okay.
Isn't that what we're all looking for in a partner? Just a hot female.
well, I mean,
half of the population, yeah. I mean,
I'm speaking for myself anyway.
Yeah, approximately.
No, I'm just, as long as she's hot and she's a female.
Hey, that's, you know.
For Tim, I think as long as she's hot, female, and Aaron, then that's, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. That works for me.
Can you give him something a little bit better than that, Joe?
Here we go. I've got something.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So, okay, what would you do if you lived in a society where the only long-lasting relationships were arranged marriages occurring at the age of 18 to bug-type Pokemon?
Oof.
What would you do?
What?
Am I aware of other... Like, is it an option to leave and abandon the tribe?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Sure, that's a acceptable answer.
Can I get some clarification on what you just said? Can you... So what you're suggesting is that this is a hypothetical society in which, when you're 18, you get married to a bug Pokemon.
Well, specifically a bug-type Pokemon, yeah. And it's the only type of long-lasting relationship that exists in this society. Like, everyone else, I guess there's probably a certain amount of just sleeping around, and just like nobody has like deep friendships particularly. The only possibility you might have for a relationship like that is with your bug Pokemon bride that you did not choose in your late teens.
I would leave the tribe.
I'm kind of fascinated if this is where your brain's at. Is that
you said hypothetical and that's what I came up with.
That's the first thing that came to mind. Is that something you came up with beforehand or like
no.
Okay.
That seems like there's elements of that are borrowed.
I mean, probably. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Let's do another hypothetical.
Let's do this one. And also, Joe.
Okay, so Joe says he would leave.
I think we should hire Tim as our hypothetical guy from now on. That was pretty good on the spot.
That was pretty good.
What do you mean leave, though, Joe? Like, what, like, what does that mean?
Are we, like, trapped on an island? Are there, like, mountains?
Are we
geographically separated from other tribes?
Well, in theory, it's a... That's a good question. It's probably a limited community. I don't know exactly how big it is. Could be, and you don't know either, actually, because you just live there. To me, what it sounded like in your answer is that you're going to leave and just see if you can do any better. See if this is how it is across the entire planet. You're gonna just go and see if you can get something better. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, if I stay, my options are no emotional connections or emotional connections with the bug type Pokemon. So
yeah,
I'm looking for something different than that.
Okay, fair enough. Lars?
Oh, Tej is here.
Oh, very good.
Okay, so
okay.
I've just sent a link to the chat.
Is that real?
Yeah, that's one of the Ultra Beasts from the new games. It's called Buzzswole. Okay, so here's the thing.
Jesus Christ.
I would see if I could get arranged to be married to Buzzswole.
Okay.
The reason why has nothing to do with what we think of as the traditional reasons for marriage.
Mm-hmm. No, I could see that.
But because I feel like I would be like a mobile like death tank if I rode on his back. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I could go into battle and claim victory and, you know.
You got to consider
the implication.
I mean, he might want consummation. If you're into that, that's fine. But it might be a high cost to pay.
Yeah, he might want to do nose stuff.
Oh, wait. No, in that case, no, that actually leads me to another question.
Okay.
Do you have to participate like with that kind of stuff? Because that would change my answer.
What are you gonna do? Buzzswole, okay, you guys are married, yay.
He's 7 foot.
You go into your honeymoon suite and he says, all right, my friend.
He weighs 735 pounds.
Disrobe. What are you gonna say? Like, no, thanks. I'm good.
Well, I mean, I would probably say no.
Gets I mean, yeah. And look, that's a perfectly acceptable answer. Take your chances, and maybe he'll be like, oh, okay, I understand. But then why did we get married?
By the way, hi, Tej. He's listening in on the recording channel. Muted. By the way, he jumped in like at the moment we were talking about whether you would have to have sex with Buzz Swole. Oh boy.
Well, look, so Buzz Swole is. Oh,
I got a lot of hypotheticals. I want to kind of do another one. Can we do another one? Can we just keep jumping?
Sure.
First, just let me read this.
All right, what do you got?
No, don't worry about Joe. Just move on. Just go.
No, give me some Bulbapedia. Go ahead.
It has bulging muscles that appear to be made out of sacs that are filled with a red fluid.
Yeah.
That has small white bubbles rising in it.
that's right. Rad. Yeah. All right, Lars.
It's intimidating,
that's,
I guess.
That's a little.
You guys chose very different paths. I'm pleased with that.
Well, I went very utility, and then I realized that there would have to be sex. So
yeah, I mean, maybe you say that, and he's like, oh, thank God, because I find you repulsive. Like,
or maybe he just wants to go have sex with other Pokemon, and I can go on and do my thing.
It's political for him too, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now you're in an emotionally unattached relationship.
This episode has gotten to a really weird place. Can we do another hypothetical?
Okay, so what would you do if all the books in the world, the pages turned to like this coagulated sort of honey stuff? It's really sticky. And whenever you read, your hands become increasingly sticky as you read text. So this is like a microscopic experience you have every time you read a letter of the English language. Or any other language. What do you do?
I kind of wish that this was a video podcast because my facial expressions of just like, what the fuck are going on right now? But
this is the point of hypotheticals. You got to think outside the box. Yep. Joe, what's your question?
We have plenty of them to bust out, but I'm happy to let you go for it this time because you seem to have a knack for it.
This is fun.
So
I'm kind of confused about what the nature is of this coagulated honey.
Well, yeah. What do you mean by coagulated as opposed to regular?
That's a good point. I was just thinking it was like...
Yeah, like what is coagulated
mean? I was thinking
mean?
It was no, kind of solid. Because so it's not like... It's just like a hard cover with a bunch of liquid between the two. You can turn pages, but they're really, really sticky. I would probably never
like
touch a
wax
book again.
Or something.
Personally.
Oh, I thought you said when you read something, your hands get sticky. I thought you meant like also on your phone or on a computer.
I did actually, because it's not a very good hypothetical because I added two sort of unrelated clauses, but I did say that.
What's the substance?
I think it's a honey. I think it's probably edible. It gets on shit. And then if you like, it probably gets nasty if you like leave it out for a long time. I would just think the stickiness experience is the most intense reading a physical book.
I feel like that last line out of context would make a funny cold open, by the way.
Yeah, I should do that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So here's my answer. Yeah. I feel like I would want to. Okay. There's that. I would kind of want to. Okay. Thanks, Joe. Anyway, I would probably want to open up like a business where I would sell the honey. I feel like if I could just like read for a few hours every day, and then you don't have any production costs, and it's other than the jarring, it's pure profit. So that's me, you know, resident Lars business graduate capitalist here. But
excellent,
Joe, what you got?
Yes,
it's not a very good hypothetical.
Yeah, you need a better answer than yes, Joe.
How would it change your life?
Answer this question as if your life depended on it.
So when I'm on my phone, it's also just sticky honey.
Yeah, it sucks.
I don't know. I would hate that probably. And, you know, it's just.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone would like this. It'd be kind
of. Yeah, no, it'd suck for everybody.
Yeah.
It would change society a lot.
At this point, Teach sent us a link to join honey.com/first. Honey, if you're listening, we could make a sponsorship happen. Lars even uses you already. Let us know, baby girl.
Oh,
joinhoney.com. Oh,
Tej, did you set that up for us or something, or is that made up?
It's not real.
It's just an interesting idea. I like it.
That's funny. Joinhoney.com/first.
I mean, we do have Mint Mobile, and we need to bust out NordVPN one of these days because we did just get sponsored by them. But.
Oh, yeah, that would be a really good transition right there into
speaking of NordVPN, Lars.
But yeah, let's fall ass backwards into this. Let's go with it.
Nice segue.
Why would an average person need to use a VPN anyway? I mean, what is that?
Well, there's a couple different reasons, and one of them is that people can get kind of creative with how they use the internet, and they don't necessarily want... you know, a ton of people to see that. And actually NordVPN offers an incredibly cheap plan for that.
Are you talking about pornography, Lars?
I mean...
or are you talking about something else?
Well, that's one of the many, many different things that NordVPN can help shield from observant eyes.
All right. So there's people on the internet, they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, and they don't want people to know about it.
Or maybe they're things that philosophically they think they should be able to do. But their service provider maybe doesn't agree. That's one reason you might want to have that.
So why would they use NordVPN as opposed to a different VPN?
Because it's just like ridiculously cheap for the stuff that you get. You get unlimited security for as long as you want. It's $4 a month at their cheapest plan. I mean, it's nothing.
40 per month?
You already did that joke for Mint Mobile, dude. That's
what joke? I'm not joking. No. That's... Wait, did you say four?
Yeah, it's $4 a month. And
only?
Yeah. If you don't believe me, you might want to go check out nord.t1podcast.com.
I don't believe you. I'm going to check it out right now.
And then go ahead and use the checkout code thefirstpodcast to get a 75% off discount on your first subscription.
Oh,
How is first spelled there, Lars?
Did you just ask me how the word first is spelled?
Is it the word or is it one ST?
That's a fair point.
I want to get the discount.
Okay. It's the and then first, like the actual word and okay. Podcast.
Perfect. I can remember that.
Like F-U-R-S-T, F-E-R-S-T, like.
Yeah, if you're like Joe and you can't figure that one out, you're going to have problems. And this is the least of your worries, but... For everyone else, yeah, I highly recommend you check out NordVPN. They're our new generous sponsor. If you check them out on our behalf, that helps the show as well. And yeah, we really improvised the fuck out of that one. It was kind of sloppy, but we'll get better as we go.
I wasn't sure if we could cuss. I wasn't sure if we could cuss. I meant to ask that early on.
There was one thing we had to censor recently, which is our last guest, which it was hilarious, but he brought up the band called which... It's just, it's too far for our
really?
The sponsors. They would never accept that. Yeah, no way.
Oh, I see the sponsors. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I get you. Interesting.
Yes. .com/first.
That's too much. All right.
I think I just stole Tija's joke.
Well, see, now I want to ask a hypothetical based on the premise of that band title. But I'll leave it be, I suppose.
By the way, Tija does actually have a question for you.
Oh, yes. What you got, Tija?
We can insert the actual Jeopardy music there if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Or yeah. I'll just, maybe I won't know. Sleep.
I like that way of retracting something, or just maybe I won't know.
Tej, hurry up.
That's fine. It's fine. What would you do if? What would you do? If your father was unmasked as the surviving John F. Kennedy.
Oh, that'd be really cool. I would write a movie about it. It'd be hard to play off as not goofy, but I don't know. Let's talk more about that, though, once, because Tija just tossed this question.
Yeah, yeah. Tija asks, is Curator just focusing on Humongous Entertainment games, or do you plan to expand onto other game companies? Good question, Tija.
Pretty basic question, but good.
focusing on Humongous Entertainment right now, but there are only so many of those, and we have already expanded out actually into some other companies. One that I'm really interested in doing some stuff with is we have a collaboration, you know, tentatively planned and being worked on in the background with the composer for The Sims, which I mentioned to these guys earlier, but you weren't here for that. So, you know, that involves a little bit of EA and Jerry Martin, who's just been great so far. So I've got a couple others. I don't know how long I want to be doing this, honestly. So I think that is its own kind of ticking timer. But But yeah, we've got some other really fun stuff planned. We'll see how fast things take off, especially once the music of Humongous Entertainment comes out.
I was like poking fun at him when I said it was a basic question. Sorry about that. I wasn't trying to like insult you or anything.
It's a good question.
Goofing around.
Good question.
Let's get back to the question.
JFK is your dad. He's been alive this whole time.
Wait.
Yeah.
JFK?
JFK, yes. John F. Kennedy.
Oh, I thought it was just fucking kidding.
Oh, like, no.
JFK.
No. The question was, what if you'd found out that John F. Kennedy was your dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got that. I was making a play on words. That'd be cool. I'd be like, hey, dad.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me about back in the day?
And then, is it like he has been dead all this time and it comes back as a zombie or like him?
No, he's just been still alive. So how old is he now? He would be like 75-ish.
Okay.
How old would JFK be?
John F. Kennedy died November 22nd, 1963 at age 46.
So he would be like...
No, he'd be in his late 80s.
80. Actually, he'd be like...
Oh, shit. I'm not doing the math right at all.
90-something?
So he's old.
So he was born in... he was born in like 1917. Or something. Wait, so he'd be like 102?
Joe, if we ever discover this about one of us, we should have him on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. It's a great idea.
What's 1963 minus 46?
Did you really just ask that?
Well, it's 1,917.
So, yeah, he'd be 102?
Wow.
Aren't you a math major, Joe? You should know that.
he's on the spot. It's a tense moment.
Joe is not good on the spot.
Let me redeem myself. I can ask me any other mathematics question. I'll answer it all on my own.
Okay, 18 times 7 divided by 2.
18 times 7 divided by 2?
If you listen carefully, you can hear the click-clack of the keyboard while he Googles this.
What's 18 times 7 divided by 2?
It's 63.
63.
Wow. That is some good waifu math.
Here, give me another.
You did a great job with that, Siri.
Thank you. Give me another.
This is the equivalent of shit posting right now, Joe. Let's move on.
Joe, just give me a hypothetical. Give me something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If you could have one useless superpower.
Oh, come on, man.
No, this is a good one. This lends itself to a really good conversation.
A useless superpower. So it could be out of this world.
Or it could be something like where you could effectively seduce hats. Like just something really that doesn't help you at all.
Something that will not help you almost whatsoever.
Okay.
But it could technically be. For instance, the ability to breathe while submerged under burning hot lava.
I see. Useless.
You breathe, but you'll die.
Useless.
Does it need to be like provably useless? Like where you literally can't use it, like what you just named.
The usefulness has to be marginal at best. Like, it's kind of got to be like a who cares kind of usefulness.
Okay. One of us is like, oh, that's actually super useful because you could use it to sell the pennies or so. I don't know.
Yeah, like one of our previous guests said that their useless superpower would be to be more comfortable on airplanes. Wait, that was Joe. Never mind. But yeah, that was a bad example of it. Don't do something where it's like super useful.
Like my useless superpower is I can time travel back and like... You know, like back in time,
I would be able to change any piece of art to grayscale.
Yeah, because you can already do that.
I mean, like a physical piece of art on the wall. Like I just touch it and it turns to grayscale.
Like you go to the Louvre, you look at the Mona Lisa, and Tim, turn it into grayscale.
Yes,
Tim, that's wizardry. That's something that you can take on tour. That's super useful.
Oh, that's not useful. All right, that's not useless enough. All right, hey, fair enough. Okay. I would be able to change anyone's hair color to auburn. And only auburn.
Oof.
Well, but you could start a business that way.
No, yeah, but no one wants... Does anyone want auburn hair? That's kind of like that awkward kind of like reddish brown where it's like you failed your hair dye.
It's a really here's how you small clientele, too. I mean, there's only a limited, even if people are interested in that, that's a limited yeah. number of people.
Yeah, exactly. But like, here's how you would market that. Bit, but not, like, yeah, you could market it, but it'd be like such a niche thing. Like,
here's how you would market it. You okay. would, you would post everywhere, used to have auburn hair, want to go back to your original color? Come on down.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's ever read a sign like that and thought, yep.
Yeah, yeah, that's me.
And it just requires me to have my hands in your hair for like 7 hours.
Okay.
So nobody yeah, wants to do that. Nobody's going to, like, no. I can only do one you're client right, at right. a time.
What about this for a useless superpower? The ability to cut hair above average, mm-hmm. and it's going to take you like 7 hours.
Or just, I can make butt hair really curly, but only butt hair. Okay, we found it, guys. We found it.
Well, that's yours or other people's? Other people, too? Like, you can just...
Oh, yeah, no, anybody. Anybody. You got some butt hair, just, I like, can make it curly.
Wiggle your fingers and it happens? Or, like, wait, what?
That's a good question.
Do they have to, like, say yes, or... Is it just
no,
like
no consent needed? I just do a little thing, do a little thing with my tongue, you know, just privately. Oops. I don't touch them. I just
oh, I thought you were
going to like touch them. When you move your tongue a certain way, it activates the spell.
Yeah, it's kind of you sort of shake it back and forth between your or behind okay. your lower teeth. You're just kind of
like
yep.
Wait, can you guys both do that one more time? Thanks.
Sounds like Homer lusting after a donut.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, yeah.
Tim, we're kind of getting to that point in the episode where if you have anything specific you want to plug about just, you know, upcoming projects, I guess for you in particular, it would obviously be stuff like The Sims, but anything else going on, anything people should go check out, any upcoming shows, websites they should check out, just, you know, ways that people can connect with you.
Yeah, dude. People should definitely check out our website, curator.audio, and sign up for the newsletter there, which is just on the front page, because we're going to mm-hmm. be launching our big Kickstarter for the music of Humongous Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be launching that in, it looks like April or May, and we're going to have early bird rewards for people. So if you're on the newsletter, you will be the very first to know what we've got and when we're launching, and you can get in there and get your early bird Kickstarter discounts. You'll also, of course, be informed about any of our other projects. You can also find Curator on Facebook and Twitter at Look for Curator. And yeah, just stay tuned. We got some cool stuff on vinyl and CD and some master recordings coming out for the very first time.
Yeah, just kind of actively invoke nostalgia in your brain by checking some of the stuff out, and also see some of the potential of the recordings beyond yeah. the crunched versions that you may have heard in the past. Joe, can we?
Yeah. This has been Smokey Steve and Lumber Lars.
What the fuck are you on about?
What? I thought you wanted me to do
those
the thing.
Those are gay porn stars, to be sure. There's nothing else those could be. Smokey Steve. What did you say? And Lumber Lars?
This has been Smokey Steve and Lumber Lars.
Jeez. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
What? Lars, I thought that's what you wanted me to say.
To name off gay porn stars that you're familiar with?
No, those are our nicknames for each other.
Why are you Smokey Steve? Is your middle name Steven? Like, what? Joseph Steven co-host?
No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to do something random that would make Lars, like, it would just derail everything. And we were so close, so I just succeeded. Had to derail it once.
Christ.
Sorry. No, but seriously. If you wanted to give us a quick follow and find out more, you can go to t1podcast.com. If you wanted to follow us on Instagram, well, that's going to be t1podcast. Twitter, t1podcast. You want to send us an email? That's actually going to be firstpodcastever@gmail.com. And if you want to support us on Patreon, that's going to be patreon.com/t1podcast.
Special thanks to the guy who took t1podcast@gmail.com. That was lovely. T suggested that people join the Discord. We actually just made a fun little link for you guys, so you don't have to do the awkward discord.gg/xlmnop. It's just discord.t1podcast.com. You don't have to worry about
discord.t1podcast.com.
Mm-hmm. That's how you can connect with us on here.
Now, I actually prefer the discord.com/GKRGL69.
Can you explain why?
I was being sarcastic. It's much simpler to just go to discord.t1podcast.com. I was doing my jokes. I need to practice if I'm ever going to get funny, you know?
Kind of worried because we're like 70 episodes in and it hasn't kicked in yet.
One day.